You're listening to Leaning Toward Wisdom. It's episode 5008, Pain, Suffering, Heartache, the stuff that connects us. That's another Kevin MacLeod tune. Slow Burn. Yeah, he's the guy that did Monkeys, Spinning Monkeys. The stuff that connects us, you know it's true. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name's Randy Cantrell, your host here on a stormy Friday early morning in 2008. May the 4th, 2018. It's 5008. It's the episode. Maybe you shouldn't podcast really early in the morning. Yeah, but we got to do what we got to do. Let's do it. Music, music, music. And the great thing about Friday is it's always new music. Go to iTunes, go anywhere that you buy your music, and even if you don't, anywhere that you pirate your music. You'll likely find it on a Friday. Music, movies, books, songs, stories. I love them. You love them. We all love them. We enjoy them and we remember them. I'm not a big fan of the musical. I see ads and spots here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area for these things all the time. Theater comes to town. No, can't say that I'm a big fan. There are two that I love, and I have owned these DVDs for years. You're gonna be surprised, and you may even giggle. Paint Your Wagon with Clint Eastwood and Lee Marvin. And a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum with Zira Mostel and Phil Silvers. I love them both. I'm sorry, I do. I think both of them are funny. They're entertaining. They both make me smile. They can both make me laugh. I've seen them gobs and gobs and gobs and gobs of times. And that makes them memorable for me. Music, admittedly, music is a much bigger player in my life. Lyrics, harmonies. Those are the focal points for me with music. Because songwriters have always been kind of the favorite genre, I guess. And songwriters have long said that most songs, in some way or another, are really about some sort of love. Getting it, looking for it, losing it, pining about it. Quite a few songs. I mean, just think about the songs in your life. I mean, they're about lost love, heartbreak, heartache. These are audience consumables. You know, we're watching a movie, we're listening to a song, we're reading a book, and reaching a big audience doesn't always rely on relatability. That's evidenced as this, what's this new flick that's come out? Avengers. I'm not any kind of a comic book. I know. They're called graphic novels today. I've never been a fan. Avengers, Infinity War. It's breaking all kinds of records. Well, I guess that prior one did, Black Panther. I'm told that this Avengers movie, it was produced for about $320 million, but not, obviously we're entering a new weekend, but last weekend, just in the weekend, it grossed like twice that, $640 million or something. No, I haven't seen it. Don't plan on seeing it. I don't know much, don't care much about the whole superhero kind of a genre. And I know that superheroes are not relatable, but it's that fantasy stuff. And so it's relating to something, for sure. We're attracted to it. And I think the reasons are pretty clear. Millions and millions of people love fictional stories of superheroes because we can kind of live vicariously through this kind of a make-believe thing. Harry Potter did the same thing. Even though these are stories that are steeped in human emotion and the things that do connect us, we're being entertained, and it's fine. We all like to be entertained. In fact, it's better than fine, I think, because it does give us, it gives us some touch with reality, but at the same time, it gives us a break from our own reality. And I'm supposing that that helps us cope better. We'd have to talk to somebody way smarter than me to make sure that I got that right, but all in moderation, of course. Then there are the more personal stories, though. These personal stories that, man, they really, really impact us. I get a smile. Go look at my Twitter or my Facebook header image. It's just an image from Support Your Local Gunfighter, an old Western comedy with James Garner. He was another favorite of mine. And I smile every time I think about Support Your Local Gunfighter, Support Your Local Sheriff. I can smile at many other James Garner flicks. He did a flick a long time ago. You can't find it anywhere. I've looked. I have seen it on TV. I did stumble bum around and found it 6 months or so ago. Cash McCall. It's a good... He was just really relatable, really likable. And maybe the fact that he was born in Oklahoma. He grew up in L.A., but as a native Oklahoman, we claim him, born in Norman, Oklahoma. So maybe there's that. I mean, he's just got that, I don't know, he's got that vibe and got that snarkiness. What I'm talking about today, though, here is about something that's deeper, something that's more impactful, something that's longer lasting. You know, just this, I don't know, this real connection that we're able to develop with people. And as I was thinking about today's show, and I was pondering these ideas, and I was thinking of examples that I knew that I had come across of people who were really being just profoundly... what's the word? Honest. Profoundly honest with not only themselves, but with us. People willing to be to share. And one of the first things that leapt to my mind, probably because it happened so recently, it happened back in February. There's a guy that I have followed for some time named Brian Elliott, B-R-Y-A-N, Elliott. There's a number of Brian Elliotts that I know. I know a Brian Elliott personally, and then there's Brian Elliott, who's a goalie in the National Hockey League, and there's this Brian Elliott. This Brian Elliott, he produces a web series called Behind the Brand. It's worth checking out. It's worth following. Worth subscribing to at YouTube. I don't know him. I don't know him personally at all, but I find him likable. I found him likable right out of the gate before I really knew that much about him. And he's earned my attention, but back in February, he had on his show, on his web show, Seth Godin. Seth Godin is this marketing kind of a guru out of New York. And he had Seth Godin on the show, and it was a lengthy show. And then at the end, they kind of had a fireside chat, and he reposted. I watched the whole thing. And so I saw this segment. He reposted this as a separate segment because it was getting traction. It was getting some attention. It was a little 9-minute segment with Seth that really illustrates what I'm talking about today. I'm going to embed it over the show notes. Go to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, find episode 5008, and I will embed the YouTube video of he and Seth talking. You need to watch it. You just need to watch it. Brian tells Seth that during their first interview back in 2009, Seth gave him the very best advice. And of course, he asked Seth, do you remember what you said to me? And you know, Seth Godin's Seth Godin. He talks to a lot of folks. He gets interviewed a lot. And Seth said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't remember. But it was really good stuff. Yeah, go watch the video. Well, Brian shared in the video, he shared the story of his pain as being an adopted little boy. Now, he was very grateful, still grateful, and loves the family that adopted him and that have loved him all of his life. But he grew up and began to really get this urge to find his real mother because he had big questions, as you would imagine. Many of you don't have to imagine. You probably experience it yourself. Me not being adopted, I can't relate to it. I can empathize. He was desperate for answers, and it was a very touching story. And he's much better at telling it, so I'm not going to try to tell it, and I'm not going to spoil it. You just need to go watch the video of him telling it, and I promise you, you will be moved. It will touch you. You'll feel something. And it might make you a fan, even if you've never heard of him before I just mentioned him. Why? Well, because you can't hear Brian tell his story. You can't watch him tell this story and not think he's real. I can relate. You don't have to relate to the specifics of the story, but the kind of pain that he talks about. Oh, you've had pain like that. You've had heartbreak like that. You've had suffering like that. I'm not adopted. I know my parents. I knew my grandparents. And back in February, when I first saw this video interview that he did with Seth, I was moved. I was moved, and I saw it within days of it coming out. I subscribed to his YouTube channel. So I was already following him, but the connection grew deeper because of his having told the story. I mean, it showed me something. It showed me something that I hadn't seen in him before. I had a good sense of it because I'm really intuitive like that. And I'm really observant like that, but he opened himself up. He went to some new place of vulnerability for him, and it absolutely made a difference in my feeling connected to him. He doesn't know who I am, and that doesn't matter. It's all this hard stuff, right? It's our pain, it's our difficulty. It's our suffering, it's our heartache, our heartbreak that forges these strong connections. And I say hard stuff because I know from experience that it's really difficult for people to share all that. Some people. We are prone to hide. Even those of us who want to be open and transparent and authentic and all those popular words on the internet, we're prone to hide because we want to look good. Yeah, okay. If you're inside the Facebook group and you're watching the video of me doing today's show, you're going to think, really? You're trying to look good? No, I'm not so much worried about that kind of looking good. Well, I mean, you know, because some things you just can't help, right? I mean, how much help do I need? A lot. And it's just not available to me to look good. But I'm not talking about physical appearance necessarily. We want to sound good and look good to the world. We want people to think highly of us. And in most cases, I'll go out on a limb and say in most cases, I got no proof of this, as you well know. We want people to view us better than we really are. I think that's fair to say, don't you? We want people to think we got it all together. We want people to think that we've made it when maybe we haven't. And deep down, we know it. that we just keep doing it, right? Because the mask, there's comfort behind the mask. There's comfort in the hiding, even though I've just illustrated to you, and you know deep down that it's true, that the depths of our connection are fueled not by how great and wonderful you are and how great and wonderful I am, but by how much pain you're willing to share with me and how much pain I'm willing to share with you. And sometimes I guess there are people that'll go, oh, well, great, man. It's great to hear him talk about falling on his face, because now I don't feel so bad about the times I fall on my face. My wife and I were talking just last night about how people just want to elevate their own esteem, their own self-esteem, and they do it by griping about everybody else. They really want to tear everybody else down. It's common. It's really, really common. What we care about, what we really care about, I think that's the deal. I really do think that's the deal. And so self-preservation, I get it. It's a big deal. Putting on the front so that other people think the very best about us. Meanwhile, inside, you kind of feel like a phony. Well, society's conditioned us. I don't care what society you're living in. I happen to be in Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, but it doesn't matter where you're at. People are people. Doesn't matter what language is the native tongue. Doesn't matter what the customs and the culture is. We're all people. Everybody's the same. Right? We spend years looking at people who, man, they seem better than us, don't they? Boy, they seem smarter than us. Certainly better looking. Man, way more talented. More successful than we are. So we feel like we got to do what we got to do to show up. Right? We got to show up so we look at least like we're trying. We have to belong. We can't belong by being who we really are. You know, I've got a question. To what are we trying to belong? I mean, sometimes the people that we seem to most care what they think about are people that don't necessarily matter that much. Well, I could argue, does anybody matter that much more than your own sense and awareness? And I mean, are we trying to join this big, humongous fraternity of frauds? Well, we're already there. We're in that group already. To some degree, come on, I'm not beating us all up. To some degree, we're all in that group. Group of people who are behaving just like we are. As Jackson Brown sang, the pretender. Sometimes we're all the pretender. So who are we trying to fool? Why? Why are we trying to fool these people? Well, I guess the who would be everybody. And I get it. I get it. We want to fool everybody. And maybe most of all, we want to fool ourselves. But then there's the danger. There's the huge, huge danger of self-delusion. Lack of self-awareness. And the irony of all this is this very thing that we most seem to seek, and that is this connection with other people, and yet it's completely foiled by our bad behavior, because hiding ruins that. Courage fosters it. And the paradox is that showing our underwear, which, okay, yeah, I don't mean it literally. That's my metaphor for letting other people see our pain, see our suffering, showing our underwear. And the paradox is that if doing that promotes easy connection with others, and it does, and that it takes courage, but yet it feels like weakness. It takes courage to talk to somebody about what we're going through, but it feels like weakness. Why? Fear. Fear takes over. It forces us to rationalize that we can't let anybody see us sweat, because then they'll know we're not as great as we just told them we were. We want them to think we're great. We've arrived. Look up to us, admire us, respect us. We're afraid that people will think less of us. But you know the truth. Yes, we do. We know the truth. People aren't thinking about us anyway. There's your truth. You're busy worried about what people think. You know what they're thinking? Well, it ain't about you. Sorry. They're busy thinking about themselves. They're thinking about their own life. They're wrapped up in their own pain, their own suffering, their own heartache. Yeah, yeah. They're wrapped up in their success and their accomplishment and happiness and blah, blah, blah. And all their ongoing quest to keep those things or get those things. And if you don't think that's true, then I just want you to tap the brakes here for half a second and think about your own life. Now, I don't know what time it is that you're listening to me, but unless you just woke up like I just did, just think about the last hour. The last hour of your life. Think about the last hour of your life. Have you thought about anybody more than you've thought about yourself? Your own life. Your own stuff. The stuff going. Now, there may be people connected to your stuff. I don't mean that, but have you been the focal point of what you've thought about in the last hour? Well, yeah. Well, there you go. We've conned ourselves into thinking that hiding is better. It's better for us. It's better for you. It's better for everybody. This mask, let's just keep this show going because this is the best thing for us. And we believe that it serves us well. It doesn't. Never does. In fact, it ruins our ability to connect with other people as deeply as we could because we're just another lemming in the sea of lemmings, working really hard to make sure that the other lemmings see us just like them. We're all just alike. And yet everybody's clamoring for this attention and this narcissistic chase of standing out from the crowd. Ironic, huh? Never let them see you sweat. I just want to look like everybody else. I want to be accepted. But you want your head above everybody else. You want your voice louder than everybody else. You want more attention than everybody else. More respect. More. I dug out a book. I put a photograph of this little book. And this is my original copy, by the way. I mean, the pages are yellowed. 1988, this little book came out. The name of the book is Quiet Desperation, The Truth About Successful Men. And there's a quote on the cover, and the quote on the cover was done by Jim Kouzes. Jim, he's a world-renowned leadership expert now. He was at the time, but at the time of the book being published, he was the president of the Tom Peters Group. And here's what he wrote that they emblazoned on the cover of the book. Explodes the myth of business as a totally rational process, a compelling and ultimately uplifting book about how men feel. The title of the book was taken from a Henry David Thoreau. Let's get all three names in there. A quote from him, "The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation." I got to thinking about that book. Hadn't read it in a long, long time. But the book began in the 1970s as a study to develop a new management, kind of a leadership training program. Because the goal was managers and leaders, they're really looking for a new, better way to do biz. And over the course of conducting a lot of conversations and interviews with very successful men, what the author discovered was these men were talking about things that they didn't share with anybody else. And they weren't talking about spreadsheets, and they weren't talking about the stuff of MBAs. They were talking about their relationships. They were talking about their marriages. They were talking about their careers. They were talking about their fears. They were talking about their dreams. They were talking about their heartaches. They were opening up. They were revealing themselves. And along the way, they shared with the author why it was so hard to show up that way with their peers, some with their spouses, with their friends. They were reluctant. These men, that was the object of the study, these men were reluctant to share. And each of them proved that they were desperate to change that, but they didn't know how. And they weren't just executives. They were executives. They weren't just CEOs and leaders. They were CEOs and leaders. They were men, but it transcends gender. They were human. They were human. They were people who were dreaming, people who were desiring to change. But they were stuck. They were stuck in their own fear to operate any differently than they ever had in the past. And these were accomplished, successful men. That's part of the title of the book. It's the truth about successful men. Well, I'll go you one better. It would also be the truth about unsuccessful men, more so. For the first time in my life, I'm talking about right now. For the first time in my life, I feel like my professional life, my personal life, my spiritual life, these big three, I feel like for the first time, these are really falling into alignment better than they ever have before. I'm not saying that they haven't been aligned, but it's even better today. I can't live an incongruent life. I know people who can. They can compartmentalize. I can't. If work sucks, it affects other things. And I know that I'm not alone in that, but I do know people who can get up and, I mean, they can compartmentalize, and one thing, they're much better at it than I am in letting this part of their life impact this other part of their life. I'm bad at it. I'm really bad at it. But today, I don't know that ever before, I mean, I'm pausing and I'm thinking about it. I don't know that ever before have I been able to get my energy and my thoughts and my actions to be more aligned than they are right now, because they each seem to be kind of parallel, running parallel with one another. And I'm finding myself talking, even to you, about the same things that I'm talking about in professional terms. And it all seems to be kind of converging into this one big broad boulevard, that the lane is narrow in that the focus is about this very topic of us. Can we share our experiences, and can I benefit from hearing your shared experience? Can you benefit from mine? And not in the sense that we're trying to live each other's lives, that we're trying to coerce each other, that we're trying to judge each other, just that we're just trying to learn from one another. That big idea right there is kind of filling this boulevard for me in all these different areas of life that are kind of converging into one big kind of a lane. And it's pretty stinking good, right? For us to be living more openly, more authentically to who and what we really are. And I get that there needs to be safety for that. I don't want you to misunderstand that I'm just preaching, yeah, just throw it all out there to the universe. A lot of people are, and most aren't. Just to become better every day, right? I mean, that's the goal. That's what Leaning Toward Wisdom is all about. It's not that okay, listen to me because I'm already there. I've accomplished it, so now let me tell you how to do it. That's not it. It's the journey, man. It's all the journey. When I first read this book, Quiet Desperation, back in the late 80s, I didn't have any idea, had no idea that here 30 years later, I would be embarking on this new professional journey to help business owners, not just men, but help business owners overcome this very thing, to overcome this quiet desperation. Let's not let this desperation remain quiet. That's what the Peer Advantage by Bula Network is all about. A professional peer advisory group that's designed to serve small business owners operating businesses in the range of 10 to 50 million bucks, give or take. And so, yeah, if you're a small business owner or somebody who knows somebody who is a small business owner and you care to check out more about that, you can go to thepeeradvantage.com. Because what I'm caring about is I'm caring about business leaders, and I'm not caring about them just in the context of being a business leader. I'm caring about them in context of being human, being a person. Yeah, so I'm inviting you to check that out. It's fascinating to me. It's fascinating when the quiet desperation that has been quiet for so stinking long finally comes out. I mean, like Brian Elliott. I mean, for some reason, in that moment, sitting with Seth Godin, did he plan that? Did that hit him in the course of that interview? I don't know. I don't know how premeditated it was, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't diminish it if it was premeditated, nor does it diminish it if it wasn't. But he was compelled to open up about this. In fact, he mentioned in the little 9-minute clip that I've posted over the website, he mentions that he's kind of reluctant to share it because it is so personal. So he decided to go with his heart, and he didn't just go with his head. And boy, it was a good move. It was a good move. I mean, here he is. He's leaning into his emotional space instead of just letting his fears rule the day. My guess is, and it strictly is a guess based on how we all behave as humans, is that he made a decision to just open up. And maybe he asked himself the question, why not? Why shouldn't I? I mean, it's Seth Godin. And the advice that Seth had given him that he starts off is he was going through a really difficult time with his business and his career and just trying to keep things above the waterline. And he had been chasing Godin for a year and a half, and you know, Godin's a busy, popular guy. And at some point, Godin gave him a piece of advice, and he said, the cavalry's not coming. There are no rescue boats. Stop waiting to be picked. Stop waiting for CNN or whatever. You know, you've got to take control, and you've got to take accountability and responsibility. And he said, it hurt. It really hurt him. But he said it changed his life because it woke him up and it made him realize, you know what? He's exactly right. There are no rescue boats coming. Well, maybe you've heard advice like that before. I certainly have. And I've given advice like that before, mostly to myself. I'm first in line. Get in line behind me if you need that advice. But we all need that advice. Because there aren't any rescue boats coming. This is our life. We've got to make our choices. We've got to decide some things. You know that I'm working toward, if you've been listening at all for the last number of episodes, I'm working my way through this book, and I'll have more to say about that in a future episode, but it's just, yeah, I mean, this is the real stuff. It's the stuff that we think. It's the stuff that we believe, which drives what we do, which gives us these results that we get. But my guess is that Brian in this moment decided I'm going to open up. And if he thought too much about it, my guess is he would have talked himself out of it, because that's what most of us do. We let fear come in and overrule us. But let's clarify, and I want to differentiate complaining and whining from letting down our fear-based guard and taking the mask off so that we're willing to share our pain and our experiences. Because there's a huge, huge difference. One, whining, complaining, moaning, and groaning, completely selfish. totally selfish. There's just no other viewpoint. Sorry. If you have a different viewpoint, you're wrong. You know people. I hope you're not one of them. And it's just, it's the habit they're in every day. You know, I mean, the big sigh just typifies their life. It's how they live their life. They are committed to it. They're ridiculously selfish. They don't care about anybody but themselves. Keep the mask on, do whatever they got to do, whine, complain, moan, groan. They're victimized. They're constantly a victim. They're a victim of you. They're a victim of me. They're a victim of everybody. They're a victim of circumstance. Bad things happen to them. They just walk around with this cloud hanging over them all the time. And without that cloud, I don't know that they would have a purpose in life. I don't think they would know what to do with themselves. I keep hoping a bolt of lightning will come out of that cloud and just fry them right where they are. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the kind of sharing pain and suffering that's genuine. And these two are not even, I mean, they're not even closely related. So I don't want us to confuse ourselves. Hoping that somebody will give us some attention because we moan, we groan, and they'll look at us, oh, well, I'm so sorry, is very different than being authentically candid about what we may be going through. Too many people embrace that whole victim mindset. I get it. It feels good. It feels good to believe that everything that happens to us in life is not our fault, that we had no part in it at all. I was just sitting here trying to be a perfectly good human being, and out of the blue, I have these bad things happen to me. And they happen to me over and over and over and over again, but it's never my fault. Okay. Short-term salve is what that is. It's a Band-Aid. The problem is it doesn't heal the problem. It doesn't fix the problem. It makes the problem feel better in the moment because people feel sorry for us. Problem. It just further damages us. It makes the wound and the injury worse. We just don't see it. I get tickled sometimes at people who enter a room and moan. It's funny. I rather suspect that you'd probably almost have to let them hear a recording of themselves to prove to them that they do it. I've got these people in my life, and it doesn't matter what, every time you see them, it's how they roll. I don't know that they mean to. Maybe they did at some point, but I know what they're hoping for, and it works. That's the problem. It works in the short term, and it continues to further the damage, but they want people to feel sorry for them. You know, these people that just, they're just hoping somebody will ask them what's wrong so they can tell you. Okay, no, we're not talking about those folks. Oh, you poor, poor person. I'm so sorry that lightning hasn't come down and struck you so that I don't have to listen to this drivel anymore. I guess for some people, any attention will do, right? It's a habit. Sick, destructive, bad habit. Not talking about that. I'm talking about reaching a spot where you will allow, or you will allow your heart to go to a place of pent up pain, like Brian Elliott did. A place where we finally get brave enough to embrace our humanity, and as I call it, show our underwear. Where we feel confident enough, brave enough, safe enough, secure enough with this other person or these other people to let them know about our struggles and about our suffering. And at that moment, at that very moment, and it's true 100% of the time, at that very moment, in that very instance, man, we're connected to that person. We are. You know it's true. We're connected to that person unlike the guru, unlike the expert who's standing up there on the stage with the spotlight going and all the fanfare, and they've got it all together, and we're looking at them and thinking, man, they've got it all together. I wish I had it all together. They can spew forth all this advice, and it could be great advice. It could be sound advice. And they can tell us what we ought to do, and they could tell us what we shouldn't do. And inadvertently or maybe advertently, they rob us. They don't mean to, but they rob us of the experience to figure things out. They rob us of owning our own stuff and living our lives without feeling like we're a victim or feeling like, well, you know, we're not as lucky as they are. Our circumstances are different than theirs. Yeah, they were. All of our circumstances were different. So, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. It's not about gurus. This is about you. It's about us. It's about all of us. Doesn't matter how ordinary, it doesn't matter how extraordinary we may be or we may think we are. It's about us, all of us. It's about those of us who are financially wealthy. It's about those of us who are not, those of us who are strapped. It's about those of us who are debt-free, and it's about those of us who are debt-laden up to here, mortgaged, leveraged. It's about those of us who are single. It's about those of us who are married. It's about those of us who have no prospects of being anything other than single, and about those of us who may have many prospects. It's about those of us who have very little color. It's about people of color. Doesn't matter. It's about those of us with all kinds of letters after our name that prove we've got all these certifications and licenses and credentials, and we've got this grand achievement with education. And it's about those of us that don't so much as have GED behind our names. Doesn't matter. Humanity. Humanity. All of humanity has this in common. Not just pain, suffering, and heartache, but the bigger burden of fear. False evidence appearing real. Fear. And boy, does it ever appear to be real. You know, I said before, and I'm going to make good on it. I don't know when, but I'm working on it. So bear with me. I'm reading the book, and I'm working on this upcoming episode where I plan to share more insights about how our beliefs drive our lives. And I've told you about this book before. And the book is basically about the way we think. And it's about our ability to change the way we think, to make up our mind, to change our mind. Not just metaphorically, but the author argues quite physically as well, based on the connections that are formed in the electricity of our brain. We're likely capable. I think we all suspect this, even if we don't know it. We're all capable, more capable of controlling our destiny than we realize. And maybe a lot of us don't want to realize that because we really don't want to own it. It's just safer to go through life feeling like somebody's pulling strings that we have no control over. There's no doubt in my mind that we can accomplish more if we simply find a way to believe it. I believe that. You may not. I hope to produce an episode or two that might persuade you to rethink your position. It's not easy to do. Might be simple, but it ain't easy. Personality traits. Those are not lost on me. I was having a conversation about this very topic over the last, it's probably a couple of weeks ago. And in the conversation with this person came up, you know, well, don't you think that some people are wired this way and some people, and positively, absolutely true. Some people are shy and bashful. Some people are introverted. Some people are extroverted. Some people are more open than others. And then it gets down to communication skills. Some of us are more adept at putting into language what's going on in our head, what we're feeling, what we're thinking. And other people have a really difficult time. They know what they think. They feel what they feel. but it's really difficult for them to convey that to someone else. So there's a lot to this. I'm not trying to oversimplify this, I don't think. I'm open and I'm candid. And I'm a pretty fair communicator. And I get that difference. I absolutely get that difference. And I tend to let the game come to me. As much as I lean toward being proactive, it really is difficult. But I really work to try to not force the game. And I don't judge. I don't judge folks who roll differently than me. I mean, we're still all people. And each of us is fully capable of hiding, putting on the mask, trying to pretend that we're something that we're not, hoping and wanting other people to think that we're better than we are, which is really the crux of it all, that people think we're better than we really are. And overcoming those fears, I think, is very individual to us. The commonality is we've all got it. How it's manifested and how we're able to deal with it might not be, well, how we're able to deal with it might be universal, but all the specifics of it might be very different. I, for instance, don't have any fear that I'm not going to be able to articulate what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling. But I know people that is their fear because they know it's difficult for them. Well, I understand fear. I may not understand that fear, but I understand fear. So does it motivate you to fully understand that what we endure, the bad stuff, the pain, the suffering, the heartache, that drives us to deeper connections? I would hope so. And is that not good enough reward to know that if I share with you my humanity, that can drive a deeper connection? Is that not enough reward for me to intentionally look for and find safe spaces and safe spots and safe people where I can do that? Or where I can do that more? There's two parts to this, maybe more. There's you, and then there's them. So there's us, and there's them, the other people to whom we get this deep connection because we're willing to show our underwear. Yesterday, here in Dallas, Texas, Jason Witten, famed tight end of the Dallas Cowboys for the last 15 seasons, I think they said this guy's missed one game. It's kind of ridiculous. Well, he retired. He stepped away from being part of the Dallas Cowboys to join Monday Night Football. 15 seasons, all of them as a Cowboy. It was Coach Bill Parcells who drafted young Jason, third round in 2013. And by all accounts, when we look at Jason Witten, whether you're a Cowboys fan or not, we look at Jason Witten, and by all accounts, what you see is what you get. He is who you think he is. He's that good of a guy. He's a genuinely good guy who mostly tries to do the right thing all the time. He's a lock for the Hall of Fame. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. And you know, like all retiring athletes, Witten said yesterday that what he was mostly going to remember were the moments with teammates, because one of the in the Q&A after he gave his little spiel, one of the questions was, what are you going to remember most? Do you remember, you know, just moments with your teammates? Or are you going to remember, you know, the victories on the field, blah, blah, blah? And without hesitation, he said, oh, the moments. It's going to be the moments. Well, I knew that. Had you been listening, you might have known that too. It's the moments. He's going to miss the locker room. He's going to miss this whole band of brothers feeling that they have of going through the same struggles and the same pain and the same heartache and the same training. Now, the accolades are great. The victories are great. The winning's great. But the grind with teammates, the grind in these moments, that's what was memorable. That's what will be memorable to him. You can hear other retired athletes, guys that haven't been in a locker room in decades, and they still talk about how when they were in their 20s and 30s and they went through these tough times with, with teammates and the huge impact that that had on their life and how that's just this indelible memory now for them. Jason Witten's life as a Dallas Cowboy likely includes a much larger circle than mine or than yours. I'm just guessing. But even though I've never experienced the pain, the suffering, or the heartache of a professional athlete, I don't have to, and you don't have to. For us to relate to him, for us to relate to a guy that got his jaw broken at some point early in his career, and Bill Parcells gave him the advice that built his career, so he says. And that advice was, as he was in a hospital with plates in his jaw, Parcells said, "I've been waiting for this opportunity, so I really want you to listen to me, and I want you to look at me." Durability, dependability, that's the key. Being available to play makes all the difference in the world. Well, what if that message didn't resonate with young Jason Witten? I don't know what did, because here he is now 15 years or so later, and boy, that was his, right? That was his career. Reliable, dependable, honest, durable. I don't know. I mean, I was struck, and many of us here in Dallas-Fort Worth were struck, anytime the Cowboys would lose, which frankly was far too often, Witten was the one that would face the press. Witten was the one who wouldn't make excuses. Witten would be the one. Now, he wouldn't throw teammates under a bus. He would just say, you know, we didn't play good. You know, we blew it. Where most people just hid, he did not. And what he was, as a player, is what I think we aspire to be ourselves: reliable, dependable, honest, durable. And it demonstrates that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're a multi-million dollar a year pro athlete playing for the Dallas Cowboys, or you're just like us, some working schlub. The deep connections are with family and friends with whom we can safely share our pain. And it's not a one-way street. It's our ability to show our underwear, and it's our ability to let other people do that with us too. The them matters, because these are people who are willing to view us as a safe person with whom they can share their pain. They're the ones that are drawn more closely to us. You think about the people in your life. Think about the people that you have the absolute deepest, closest connection with. You feel comfortable and safe to share your pain with them. They feel comfortable and safe to share their pain with you. That's not an accident. Listen, laughs are terrific. I love to laugh. Smiles are great too. I embrace them at least every Saturday. Good times. We need good times. And we get good times. We have good times. These things add zest to our life. But growth, improvement, transformation, and connection mostly occurs when we're grinding our way through something. We're grinding our way through or past some adversity, some challenge, some difficulty. And it's hard. But it's a lot harder when we're surrounded by people who get it. And the odds are most people do get it, because we've all got it, adversity. When we encounter somebody brave enough to step out from behind the mask, it can give us the courage we need to step outside the mask. I have facilitated some groups over the course of time, and somebody has that bravery. And before you know it, somebody else steps up, and then somebody else. It's funny how that bravery is contagious if the room is right. Doesn't always happen, but it can happen pretty frequently, and it's pretty stinking amazing. Somebody with the courage to stop hiding from their fear, stop hiding from their pain, stop hiding from their failures, stop hiding from accountability. What does that mean for you? I don't know. Do with it as you please. I'm not going to tell you what to do. Do you want to focus on not hiding as much? Do you want to focus on being less hypocritical? Do you want to focus on trying to get out from behind the mask? Do you want to be more open? Do you want to shell it down with people? The adversity, the problems, the challenges, the opportunities. Do you want to shell that down with somebody? I don't know. I mean, there's a ton of questions to be asked here and a ton of answers that I can't give you. You have to come up with them on your own. I just do hope, I sincerely do hope, that you find value in the truth, because that's what this is, in the truth that this is all how it rolls, the truth of what connects us to help you move away from the fear that might be standing in your way of embracing the opportunity and the ability to share the pain so that we can benefit each other. I catch myself saying it more than I've ever said it before. It's this new thing that's kind of entered my vocabulary, my communication. The power of the collective. I believe in it. It's why I've kind of morphed a little bit with the message. It's why I've morphed the work. It's, like I said, it's permeated every area of my life. We need to get to this place where we don't make it about ourselves, but we make it about helping other people, knowing that we're all hurting in some way. And if I could legally do it right here, you know what I'd cue up? You know the song I would cue up. You gotta know. Come on, think about it. It would be R.E.M.'s Everybody Hurts. That's what would be playing instead of Slow Burn. Yeah, but Slow Burn it is. Be well, grow great, lean toward wisdom. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. I invite you to join the Facebook group. You can find out how by going to the website. Greetings and welcome on a stormy Friday. From Dallas, Texas, inside the Yellow Studio.